For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder. The military junta that ruled Argentina from 1976 to 1983 kidnapped, murdered, and disappeared as many as 30,000 unarmed civilians. On Thursday, former Argentine dictators Jorge Videla and Reinaldo Bignone were convicted of directing the systematic abduction of infants born in clandestine torture and detention centers to women detainees who were killed after delivering their babies. The infants were then given to adoptive families close to the military. The convictions vindicate 36 years of tireless efforts by the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo to identify and locate their stolen grandchildren and to bring the perpetrators to justice. Marie Trigona is a writer, radio producer, and filmmaker who has reported from Argentina for numerous media outlets over the years, covering Latin American labor struggles, social movements, and human rights. Her writing has appeared in Z Magazine, NACLA, Monthly Review, and the Buenos Aires Herald, as well as on her own blog, Latin America Activism. She also collaborates with the Argentine video and direct action collective Grupo Alavio. Marie Trigona, welcome to Sounds of Dissent.
Thank you, Amy.
It's a pleasure to have you join us today. It's a pretty significant week in Argentina. Tell us, what is the significance of this case for Argentines?
Well, this is one of the first times that the justice system has formally recognized that there was a systematic plan to appropriate take away children born in clandestine detention centers and children of individuals who were kidnapped and disappeared. Before the state had treated these appropriations of children born while their mothers were in captivity as isolated cases. So this was a very historic sentence, and according to the human rights groups like Mothers of Plaza de Mayo and Abuelas de Plaza de Mayo, that this is the first time that the judicial system has explicitly and clearly recognized that there was a clear systematic theft of children, but there has been some criticism that the sentences of Rafael Videla and nine others were very light. That justice, could have received higher sentences.
Now, this man is 80 years old now, and the sentence was 50 years. So this effectively, he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. Was it symbolic? In other words, whether it's 50 years or 100 years makes no practical difference, but maybe a symbolic one.
Yeah, it's very emblematic for justice, long overdue. The grandmothers and the mothers have fought for over three decades for justice for the crimes committed during the 1976-83 military dictatorship. Rafael Videla is already serving a life sentence for the systematic disappearances of thousands of activists during the dictatorship. And before his life sentence, he was carrying out he was under house arrest for these crimes, for the disappearance of activists and also the theft of babies.
I'd like to jump in, actually, and introduce the background for people. Many people are sort of familiar with the history of Argentina. Mm-hmm. For them, many people think, well, there were other dictatorships in Argentina before that. There were dictatorships in other countries as well in Latin America during this period. But this was kind of a singular, the character of this dictatorship was quite singular in Argentine history. The military juntas that seized power beginning in 1976 were credited with introducing the word desaparecido, or disappeared, into our modern vocabulary. I wonder if you can, for listeners unfamiliar with Argentine history, if you can take us back to that time as it was experienced by victims and survivors.
Well, between 1976 and 1983, Argentina's junta, they disappeared over 30,000 people. Most of these people were activists, labor activists, students, and there was a systematic plan to kidnap, torture these individuals in clandestine detention centers that functioned all over the country, and to disappear them, literally. Very few bodies have been recovered, and there was a systematic plan to disappear individuals. They were kidnapped from their homes, or some were in clandestine locations, hiding from the persecution of the military.
Tell us about the ESMA, the Escuela de Mecánica de la Armada, I guess the Navy Mechanic School in English.
Yeah, over 300 clandestine detention centers functioned around the country. ESMA, which is located in Buenos Aires, at the plain view site of a major avenue in the country's capital, functioned. Over 5,000 people were disappeared from the ESMA. So this was a broad nexus of terror, as it has been described by survivors of the ESMA, and family members of victims who perished in the ESMA. Individuals were taken to the ESMA. There were torture chambers at this clandestine detention center. There was a maternity ward for pregnant detainees who were kept in captivity, and they were forced to give labor in captivity, and many children were taken from their mothers from the ESMA. And they were handed over to military families or corroborators with the military, so-called civilians who were acting as accomplices in the military's crimes at the time. There's an estimated 500 children who were appropriated during this time, and the Abuelas de Plaza de Mayo, through their unrelenting efforts, they've been able to recover the identity of over 84 children who are now in their 30s, of course, who have been able to recuperate their identity.
We're talking then about two generations of victims, really. The victims, the original victims, the parents who were abducted, tortured, and murdered, and then their children who were robbed of their biological parents and their identities. I wonder if you could tell us about the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, and start with the name. Grandmothers, mothers, why the Plaza de Mayo? What did these women do, and how were they treated in the early part of the dictatorship?
Well, the idea of systematic disappearance is it served the purpose of terrorizing an entire nation, terrorizing an entire continent. The military, they had a systematic plan to disappear activists, to silence any type of resistance so they could implement a neoliberal economic model, which was part of a Washington consensus at the time. And the disappearances served the purpose of terrorizing a society. And the mothers of Plaza de Mayo, who were the mothers of these disappeared, and also later on the grandmothers of Plaza de Mayo, formed in a time where an entire society was absolutely terrorized into keeping silent about the crimes that were occurring at the time. The mothers of Plaza de Mayo, they began meeting in Buenos Aires in front of the presidential palace, in front of the Plaza de Mayo, and they began making rounds in 1977 to demand information about the whereabouts of their missing children.
1 year into the dictatorship.
Yes, one year into the dictatorship, they were threatened. They were, arrested. They were never given any answer, and they began making rounds because at the time it was illegal for groups of five or more individuals to congregate. So they would walk around the Plaza de Mayo, making a round. So they could organize and show visibility about these crimes that were occurring at the time that they had no answer for. They began to wear a white handkerchief, to symbolize the diapers of their missing children. And after this, many of the women, they knew that their daughters were. Daughters and daughter-in-laws were pregnant at the time of their abduction, and wanted to know the whereabouts of their grandchildren as well. They faced persecution. Two of the founding mothers were disappeared during the early years of when they began their struggle for human rights. And it's been a very long struggle. So this is very emblematic and very important for many of the mothers and abuelas who are now in their 80s, some in their 90s, who have waited so long for justice.
Why did it take 36 years to bring the perpetrators to justice? And I'm not just thinking of this case of the abducted children and their murdered mothers. I'm also thinking about, the first prosecutions just started a few years ago for many of these officials who were originally tried in the 80s and then pardoned, etc. What took so long? Take us through that. Like, what stopped this from happening?
Mm-hmm. Well, up until 2005, there was no possibility for further prosecution of individuals who carried out human rights abuses and crimes against humanity during the dictatorship. Nevertheless, human rights organizations and survivors never stopped demanding justice.
Because they passed a law against trying them, didn't they?
Yes,
in Alfonsine's,
Yeah, amnesty and due obedience laws
that by a democratic government.
Democratic government. And there's many explanations. I mentioned before that the systematic disappearances of an entire generation of 30,000 activists was part of a regional plan to squash any type of resistance that was burgeoning at the time to be able to implement a new economic model. Of course, this economic model was favored by many large businessmen, corporations, foreign investors, et cetera, that acted as accomplice financing these crimes, essentially. So there's, that's part of the explanation of why justice was blocked. There was a period of what was called reconciliation where the democratic government at the time, reconciled the military for their crimes as a kind of social pact to create supposedly prevent any further civil unrest. It's a complex answer, but I think part of it has to do with, even during the 80s and the 90s, even though there were, constitutional democratic governments, they continued to follow the Washington consensus and the neoliberal economic model. From 2000, the Kitcheners, Christina Kitchener and her predecessor, Nestor Kitchener, who took office in 2003,
as president,
began to break in a certain way with this Washington consensus, and it was during the Kitchener administration that the Supreme Court overturned the amnesty laws, which protected military from prosecution.
Well, didn't Kirchner impeach the Supreme Court justices that have been appointed by, I don't know, either Menem or the military dictators themselves?
I know he has appointed some Supreme Court justices since their administration has taken office. The Kitcheners have supported what's so-called the fight for memory and justicia, for memory and justice, and for recognizing what has happened in history and apologizing for the military's crimes. It was a Kitchener who expelled the military from the ESMA. ESMA is no longer, up until 2003, it was functioning as a military quartel still, as a military school. It was Kitchener who banished the military from the ESMA, and the ESMA, for example, is now functioning as a museum for memory. And so this is, very historic for not only Argentina, but also for other Latin American countries who also had dictatorships and also had disappearances and similar human rights abuses carried out, but not in the gravity of Argentina. And Argentina's reopening of the trials has really set a precedent for other Latin American countries to do the same, to prosecute military and police and even civilians for past crimes.
We're about out of time. I just like to ask one final question. What brought you, you've covered a lot, you've covered many of these trials. This is not the only trial bringing these perpetrators, military officials, former military members of the juntas to justice. What brought you into this issue?
Well, I mean, the mothers of Plaza de Mayo and the abuelas of Plaza de Mayo, they've been an inspiration for activists all over the world fighting against human rights abuses of today and of the past. And just the simple fact that, these women have fought so long and so hard for justice, and, after decades, that they certainly deserve. They've had their children taken away from them. They've had to live with this agony for decades. They have had to live with the agony of never knowing the physical whereabouts of what happened to their children, that they certainly deserve to know and to be able to continue the rest of their lives with peace, that justice has been served, and they've really, really done so much for citizens all around the world. And I really feel like that story needs to be told. And then also too, the story of the disappeared, who these individuals were, why they were disappeared, what they stood for, that they were fighting for a better world. And we can't ever forget those stories.
Thank you, Marie, for joining us today.
Okay, thank you so much, Amy, and Sounds of Dissent.
It's been a pleasure to have you. We've been speaking with Marie Trigona. She's a writer, radio producer, and filmmaker who's been reporting from Argentina. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.